Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And Joe Branton.
Hello there.
No Jay Cross this week. He's off on some fancy Fender knees up
thing. Is that where he's at?
Yeah. He's out in...
I knew that.
I mean,
he keeps sending us pictures of ridiculous custom shops.
Yeah, he really does. Did you see that one today that looked like, I don't know, looked like some sort of like porn shop Woolworths guitar?
That was weird. It was like a stretch. Jazz Master.
Yeah, very odd.
I quite liked the Green Burst Tele Thin Line and the triple humbucker shell pink Strat.
That wasn't a Fender guitar.
Oh, wasn't it?
No.
That was
oh. Yeah, that was... Was that something you sent through, Matt?
That was something I sent through, yeah.
Which was a Saw 3-pick, 3-humbucker Strat.
It's a custom classic antique in shell pink with 3 humbuckers.
Yeah, that looked awesome.
Yeah,
and then it's just
good.
Got the tagline, how would you build yours? Contact your Sir dealer now. I'm like, okay, sure.
I'm in. Do you remember, like, I hadn't thought about this for a little while, but do you remember Fender did a really weird range of guitars for a little while? Probably in about 2015, they had the triple Strat, which had 3, like,
wait,
wide range humbuckers.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't
Do you remember,
remember
these,
at all?
Matty? There was like...
Triple humbucker, maybe. What was it? Triple wide range humbuckers, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Are you Googling it right now?
I
have a vague memory. Like, one of the last things that I did while I was at GAC was some videos for these guitars, and they were like a couple of really weird ones. They were just odd. I'm sure you'll find it, Matt.
I can't find it.
Okay.
It's weird. I remember there being a Tele, which was the John 5.
Yeah.
That was unbelievably cool. That had the 3x3 headstock.
But they had a Strat with really similar aesthetics.
I mean, I want a 3-humbucker Stratocaster. That I'm into.
Well, I mean, it was available for a time. I'm sure called the Triple Strat or something.
Oh, that's a great name. I remember around that time the Triple Tele came out, which had 3 of the Twisted Tele... bridge pickup.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Tom Peters bought one.
I'll tell you what I'm thinking. That was one of the guitars.
Yeah, it was great.
The Strat was a 2 wide range humbucker Strat.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. That was a great series of guitars. That triple Tele, Tom Peters from Alpha Male Tea Party, who we've done a couple of things with, he bought one of those and plays it all the time now. It sounds amazing.
It's
like the most present. Aggressive sounding Tele.
I remember it sounding really good.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Talking of odd guitars, Reverb put up a really interesting article about guitars that need like a sequel or reissuing, and they were talking about the Fender Lead series, which I've never heard of before.
Yeah, they're like weird kind of like Teles, sort of.
It's sort of like, I hate to say double cut Strat, because Strat's really double cut, but it's like the top horn is like the same level as the lower horn, and it's just got 1 humbucker on it.
Yeah,
I'm like, that is awesome. That looks amazing.
Yeah,
like, have I never seen that before?
I have never ever heard of that before.
Yeah, there's plenty out there. I need to read that article. That sounds all right. What would you do if you could do a sequel to anything, Joe Branton?
I don't know that everything ever's been good. Maybe. They don't really do an Esquire in the standard line at the moment.
Okay, so Esquire 2.
Yeah, I'd have the Esquire 2, and it would have a...
2 pickups.
Yeah, no. it would have two bridge pickups.
Okay.
Tight it, together, but not a humbucker.
Right. So it's just
close together.
Two different options.
You know how like the Stephen Carpenter seven string has the two humbuckers like right next to each other.
Okay.
Like that, but with two angled single coils.
Okay.
It'd be amazing.
Interesting. Matty, what are you saying?
Do you know one guitar, maybe not necessarily a sequel, but something that needs reissuing, and I think they need to do it properly, Yamaha SGs, the classic Yamaha SGs.
Yeah.
I mean, Revstars are... No, they're not.
No,
really,
they're
not.
I mean, the proper Yamaha SG.
Yeah.
SG-1000, I guess.
I really enjoy spending time at the chiropractor, so I'm up for that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they are weighty. They sound so good.
They do sound incredible.
Or the Guild SGs. Do you remember, like, the one that from Soundgarden played?
They started doing them again.
Guild are back on track.
Yeah.
They're doing stuff again. Yeah, I'm telling you. You can get involved.
Yeah, you can buy Guild SGs again.
Yeah. They're actually doing all their Westerly acoustics, the Guild Westerly acoustics as well, which were super awesome, sort of like Martin Killer acoustics. They've started that up again as well. I'm so up for Guild. What were those Guild basses that we always used to see come through the shop every now and again?
There
was a two pickup and a one pickup version, kind of P90 style pickups, but obviously not because it was bass.
What is that guitar called?
Loads of fretless ones.
It's called like the G40 or something.
I couldn't tell you.
Maybe that's the SG. B70?
I think something like that.
Matty, Google it. Guild B70 while you're there.
Yeah. I will.
Matt's like Oracle today. It's just if we need something like Batman, just you know, radio up and he gets the info.
Oops.
Guild B70, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, it's like like an arch top, like a double cut. No, oh, no wait, that's a Starfire. No.
I'm sure it's called the B70. But
Was it the B301?
Yes, that's it. B301. Yeah. Course, great basses, and there's also a guitar version as well, which looks kind of similar. Yeah, ooh, yeah,
that sounds rubbish.
Like a little...
They were the sort of thing that a few years ago were going for like 200 quid, and now like they're a grand.
I see them going for like 700, 750, which is about the right sort of price. They are fantastic basses. If you want like a through neck mahogany sort of single or double pickup, absolute slice of the 70s.
Also, fretless options.
Fretless options. Loads of them were fretless because that pickup was quite tight up at the bridge.
Yeah.
And it was that sort of Genesis. Yeah. Sort of everyone, you know, sledgehammer sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good little guitars, those. Yeah, I'm excited to see Guild back.
Oh, good old Guild.
Yeah. So, what's everyone been up to this week? Matt, what, have you done anything guitar-related this week?
I was actually away most of the weekend, but I did come back yesterday and had a little bit of a mess around. But today was more important because I took loan of a DV Mark Micro Jazz 50, which was finally the head version of the little mini jazz amp they released several years ago. And it's absolutely wicked.
I'm excited about this.
Was it the one that, in the combo, was it the one that was like little 10 or 12-inch speaker, open back?
We talked about it briefly, I think, last week, where the combo, they did an 8-inch combo and a 10-inch combo, but the 10-inch was like, weighed absolutely nothing.
The 8-inch combo was the popular one because it was like sub £400. It was white. It was a 50-watt amp head built in. It was the crystal cleanest thing you've ever seen. You could carry it around it anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is basically a simple single-channel 50-watt head with bass, middle, treble, onboard digital reverb, volume, effects loop, and they're like less than €300.
Amazing.
It's just like super clean. You can't distort it even if you turn it up full. And it works great if you want like a stereo amp. You want like another amp to run a good stereo rig. Takes pedals really well. It's brilliant.
I love DV Mark.
That's basically kind of what I bought it for.
Considering you don't like Mark bass, the fact you love DV Mark is confusing to me.
I really... Because it makes sense for guitar, for stuff to have like... To be super clean, have loads of headroom and be able to take pedals well. Bass should have character. Guitar... needs to have no character so you can apply that character with your pedal board.
Okay, fine. I don't agree with that in the slightest, but...
I mean, I would say it's probably about the size... It's a little bit bigger. Maybe an M5 and another half of an M5. That's the size. It's absolutely diddy.
So you could even put it on your pedal board. Just have everything on your board.
Well, yeah.
You could put it under your pedal board.
Do you think?
Well, maybe you could make like an angled wedged pedal board and then have that like on the front plate like faces the audience and then just plug your lead into that.
Or just get
half patch bay and half like get, pedal board.
Get them to do a Matt Knight special edition where all the controls are on the top.
Yeah. Or just get... Well, what about this? You're not talking about the Seymour Duncan Power Stage 170.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes straight on your pedal board. It looks gorgeous in that sort of like brushed aluminium. You've got bass, middle and treble and a great big knob on the front for volume. Stop it.
Ridiculous thing. What?
It's more expensive than the amp head.
What? Oh, yeah. That's true.
Probably just get the DV Mark.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the DV Mark mic jazz is 289
That's
euros.
Crazy. That's crazy. They're just...
It's so good for the money. I was like, brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. DV Marks makes such good stuff.
Yeah, and then I also I did a bit of a video shoot this week for some bits of work. And I was using a Katana Artist. And I was like, first time I actually like sat down and cranked one up, and I was like, man, this thing sounds really good. There like, were... I've played loads of the other Katanas, but I hadn't plugged the Artist in properly, and I'm like, oh, maybe I need to buy a Katana.
Have you not got
more
a Katana?
I just haven't got one. I haven't needed to buy one.
Yeah, I guess at home you're kind of covered for amps and stuff.
Well, exactly, and I actually don't have any more space.
I've got loads of Katanas, mate.
You have actually got loads of Katanas. It's really weird.
Well, they're really good.
Is that thanks to Joe, everyone in his scene of band friends are now buying Katanas. So yeah, thanks, true. Joe.
Just going around, it's a little silent salesman
Math
for you.
Math Rock is suddenly becoming like a solid state.
Yes.
Ditching the orange.
Yeah, everyone's moving from orange to Katana.
So it's almost like it's the 80s. Headless guitars, yeah. Solid state amps,
yeah.
Rack gear.
It's all coming. It's all coming. All of this has happened before.
No, he's not here. You're not allowed to say it.
Right.
Yeah. So how quickly will that stuff fall out of fashion?
Yeah.
How soon will all your effects become the new Digitech 2120?
I mean, people have already started to downsize their boards. There's a big thing with there's a one of the most popular sort of upcoming bands in math rock at the moment are this Bristol band called Chioda Coup
and Chioda
Chioda Coup. it's a place in Japan, I think.
Okay.
They've started to do this whole like minimal thing. Well, basically, right. They got robbed and lost all their gear. And so they used it as an opportunity to switch up to a super minimal setup. So the guitarist and the bass player don't have any effects now at all. And the drummer is like kick drum, snare, hats. I think there's a floor. And
someone in the audience goes, play one of the old ones. And they're like, we literally cannot. We can't do it.
But so it's causing a revolution. I think people are going to start to go old school. Lo-fi. Lo-fi is the way forward.
I don't think. And you start buying Strats.
Yeah. But I'm getting old.
That is true. You're aging out of the math scene.
That's it.
Are you seen as like the granddaddies of math?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because math's a young person's game. We're the granddads.
Really? You've got like kids in that.
Well, I don't, but, one of the other
We're
ones.
We're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay, it's probably for the best. You've also been doing some guitar stuff this week, hanging out with your old mate Ed Sheeran.
That's right. I put aside some time at the end of this week and had a big, well-earned go on the Ed Sheeran acoustic, the Martin LX Ed Sheeran.
Okay, how was it?
It was surprisingly good. I actually thought it was okay. Look... The fact is, and I only realised this afterwards, you can just get a Martin LX. You don't have to get one.
Yeah,
and then basically it's just as good, but doesn't have his stupid logo on it.
So this is, what, the third Ed Sheeran model, I think? Something like that?
Yeah, he's had one for every album, and I think it's had a different, like, luminous colour on each one. So I think the first one was, like, green and had, like, a plus symbol or something. Second one was red, had a multiply symbol.
Yeah.
This one has a divided symbol and is luminous blue.
Right.
No, on the fretboard and on the headstock and on the rosette.
Yes.
But they're actually like great. They are so well built. Like they're so heavy duty. They're quite weighty. Really, the Sickler spruce on the top is really, really thick. Richlite fingerboard. And it's got that, you know, that ply birch thing or that laminate birch
on the neck. Yeah.
That they do, which is super cool.
Where it kind of fans out as it goes into the body.
Yeah.
And into the headstock as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I hate him as well. I don't care. Like, I don't care about the dude. But like, I was like, this is a good guitar. But then I found out you can actually just get
buy
it
a normal
without
one.
His head. And I was like, I'll do that.
The problem is, and I don't know if it's still the case, but when we were working at the shop, you could just never get LX1s. They were like, we can't, literally cannot make them as fast as people want to buy them.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. Before they did the signature model, you basically, they were out of stock because that's the only guitar that Ed Sheeran played.
Yeah.
And then they did the signature ones, and then you basically can never get the signature ones. The thing for me is that I thought they were great guitars, but they sounded, to me, they didn't sound great unplugged, but when you plugged them in, they sounded absolutely fine.
Yeah. We actually... Where,
that's why the GS Mini, for me, always won over as a better guitar, because it sounded great unplugged.
I need to dig out my GS Mini again. It's been in the conservatory, and I think that's probably... It's taken a bit of a beating setup-wise.
I don't think there is or will ever be a case where the Taylor counterpart of something is better than the Martin version. I don't think that is ever going to happen.
In this particular case, I think you're wrong. Mm. In general, well, the further you go up the range, it's definitely more about personal preference. Obviously, Martin's a bit darker sounding, a little bit more kind of natural, whereas the Taylor's a bit brighter, a little bit more kind of hi-fi sounding. I think particularly if you're using them on stage and you want to plug them in, Taylor's benefit in that arena, and Martin's, I tend to think, sound a little bit better unplugged in general.
Yeah.
On these smaller ones, I much prefer the GS Mini.
Believe it or not, we did a demo video of the new Ed Sheeran LX, and we actually reshot it because I wasn't happy with the sound. We just did it plugged in first.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I don't know if I can do anything with this, because I was mixing the sound.
I mean,
for
you never plug stuff in.
No, I know, we shouldn't have. We were doing a looping thing, so it made sense for us to plug it in.
Right.
But we just redid it with a 57 on the sound hole and was like, oh, this is actually a million times better.
So. Interesting. Mm. Yeah, I would. Do you see you didn't use a room mic?
No.
Yeah. Hmm. I'll be curious to hear what that sounds like.
Yeah.
On the LX1, say.
Yeah, on the actual Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, because I think that's the thing. They don't project very much, so you have to kind of get quite a close mic to it to...
Yeah.
Get anything out of it, because room sound, they're in their own tiny little bubble, which is about 2 feet.
Yeah, it's the same thing that all parlor acoustics have, in that they're very directional.
Yeah, yeah.
I quite like that. I quite like their a kind of abrupt nature.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's why I like the GS Mini.
Yeah, it is cool.
It's a good little guitar. Mm. Did you get your hands on any other guitars this week?
This week there was actually quite...
You're the Rickenbacker at one point.
Oh, man, there was a British Racing Green 330.
Is that what it was? Because you were holding it up and I was like, yeah, it's just a black 330.
Yeah.
I've seen loads of them.
Yeah, it was a British Racing Green 330 and it was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, Rickenbackers so rarely sort of come through anymore, and when they do, they're so often sold already. And because it's and to be honest, part of it is because I work at the office, and because we get so few Rickenbackers when they come in, they tend to go straight down the shop. So I rarely get a chance to sit down with one, and I love the string spacing and how narrow that string spacing is, and I love the scale length on Ricky's. I think they're great. So I'd had a great time in the 330, and then we had more. I can't remember. We talked about all the Amazon Gibson stuff that came through. Did we talk about that last
week? Yeah, the little M2s, is that what they're called?
The M2 Melody Makers, the SG Fusions, and there's the Firebird Zeros as well.
Yeah, I remember we sort of argued about the colours last week.
Oh yeah, that's right. But there was also from that range the S series. You know the S series and Gibson, it's like their traditional meets modern, it's like their hybrid range.
No,
well, they had the denim Les Paul turn up this week. So
real denim?
No, it's just like it's
status
like
quo signature,
like a Levi's jean color through wood, but it's an ash Les Paul,
okay,
with a maple neck.
Every time Gibson do a new range, there always has to be one sneaky Swamp Ash Les Paul.
Yeah.
Always.
It's so weird. It's so weird. Yeah, with just like a pair of like quite basic humbuckers in there and a contoured heel.
Yeah, that you showed me a picture and I was like, okay, well, it's just, so you know, weird. It's like a Les Paul studio shape in this weird denim blue colour. But it's the... Do you remember when they did the Smartwood Swamp Ash Les Paul? That's what started this whole like... Okay, if we're just going to throw in a Swamp Ash Les Paul in every new range. And I was like, oh, okay, that's this year's version of that for a guitar that most people don't want, but it's kind of interesting that it's there.
Yep,
and then you showed me the back of it, and I was like, why have they done this?
It doesn't make any sense. It's weird. It is weird. And it's got the Melody Maker headstock as well, which I'm into Melody Makers.
It's a very weird guitar.
Yeah, it's a really weird guitar, but it's like a really affordable Les Paul.
What are they, like $699 or
something like that? Yeah,
but I mean, for someone who is less kind of nerdy and into stuff than we are, it's probably a guitar where they'd walk in and go, 699, American made Les Paul, absolutely fantastic. For us, I think we'd kind of be like, yeah, it's cool, but I don't get it. I don't understand what's going on.
At £699, it's cheap for a Les Paul, it's not cheap for a guitar, and there are a lot of corners cut on that instrument to make it £699 that I just think other companies aren't cutting those corners for that price point. So as much as I absolutely love Gibson at their sort of standard level, and I'm quite happy to pay the price point, I just think their entry level stuff is just too rough and ready.
I'm kind of want to just see it in the flesh. I might go down to the shop and see that cutaway in the flesh.
Do it. I think we've got 20 weird. Of them, mate. They're going to be around a while.
Okay. I'll go and check it out. Anything else anyone wants to cover before we dive into news?
No.
I'll take that as a resounding no. In that case, let's dive into
news.
You almost forgot.
No, I didn't. I was ready.
You left a gap.
Yeah. Oh, you know what else is new? There was a new Guitar Nerds video.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about that before we dive into news. New Guitar Nerds video up on the channel this week. You should check it out. Top 5 weirdest signature models.
Yeah.
Signature model effects pedals.
Effects pedals, yeah.
Something that we've talked about on the Patreon before, which helped formulate this list. But if you missed that Patreon episode, you can go and check out the video, because it's a much more kind of snappy, concise version of that conversation. But it's been getting some good feedback. People are like, that's a good list.
I guess we can't talk about any of them.
Well, no, because it'll spoil it
for anyone.
I think it's probably best left.
The Crossroads is there.
The Digitech Crossroads is an honourable mention, I would say, in the list. It hasn't quite made it through to the top five. But
I blooming love that Digitech Crossroads.
Well, you know, it's a very weird pedal. Mm. But yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's banging.
Yes.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And with that, we should dive into a whole big barrel of
news.
Talking about Gibson guitars, first up this week, Gibson have announced the Lexus model.
Oh my God. What is happening?
The Gibson Lexus Paul.
Yeah.
Is its official name.
Is that actually what it's called? The Lexus Paul?
That's what it says on the Trash World cover.
Blimey.
It's not even made it onto their website, but they did announce it via Twitter and Instagram in collaboration with Lexus for their new model of car. They have made a 57 historic classic Gibson Les Paul with 3 humbuckers with a Lexus logo inlay on the first fret.
Historic.
And a new, yeah, very, very vintage. Yeah, Les Paul Lexus inlay on the first fret, and then Lexus Paul on the truss rod cover.
I think we should point out that it's quite nice.
Oh, so it, as a guitar, it looks absolutely banging, and then you look at that first fret, and there's just the Lexus logo.
It's funny because it obviously divides everyone. Like, there's some people like, I think it's a quite a nice guitar, and people are like, this is the end of Gibson. Oh my God, I mean, what are they doing?
I love the. I was looking at the tweet from Gibson about it. That's very much like hashtag only Gibson is good enough. And, you know, it's some nice pictures of it and, like, phrases like brand synergy. And then, like, first comment is, like, very odd. Just don't get it. You know, next one down. Next one down is hashtag RIP Gibson.
Well, look, this is the thing. Actually, the thing is, I saw that and I read the comments and I was like, okay. And I was like, I bet I can find someone who would want this guitar. So my dad has been a Lexus modern car owner for about 15 years. He went, Dad, look, they're doing this Gibson Lexus Les Paul. And he went, oh, amazing. I'd buy that.
Right.
And there you go. That's it. People who own those sort of cars, who want something to match the car to hang up in their living room. They're not players guitar. And, you know, in a way, Gibson, people are going to complain, like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it's like, there's no price. I'm guessing it's probably like $7,000. But the thing is, if they only make 100, there's definitely 100 people out there who own a Lexus who have got enough money who think, do you know what? Probably buy that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the reason it's not on the website is that they're selling these in to Gibson, to Lexus car dealerships.
Yeah, maybe.
And you get one with the car, or it's an option to buy it with the car.
It's just when your company's in a position like Gibson is now, now is maybe not the time to make something that's so exclusive that it excludes 99% of your customers. Yeah. But not only excludes them, like makes a mockery of them. It's so unbelievably off-brand, and like it's so arrogant. It's so Tory. Like it's such a heavily weird, like gormless thing to do. Like why would you think that this is ever going to help your marketing by excluding people?
Thing is, when I was when I went to the Gibson custom factory a couple of years ago,
the cuss factory, I like that.
Just, you know, it's just, whatever. There was a wall. It must have had, I would say, maybe 300 guitars on it in like bags or hard cases that had names like Hummer Les Paul and like Ferrari Les Paul and Elvis Signature and stuff like that. Like all these weird guitars that they obviously make, never see the light of day. Literally, just go in a case. And I wouldn't be surprised with this if Lexus went, like, would you just reach out to Gibson and have a guitar made? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I reckon it was commissioned. And I think it's a weird choice, but I think from the other side of the business that we probably don't know about, it was probably like more Lexus just going, we'll pay.
I imagine it's probably like, Henry's gone to some gala dinner and the CEO of Lexus is there. They've sat on the same table and they've gone, oh, we could do your guitar. Oh, we'd love a guitar. Thanks. It's probably that sort of thing, I'd imagine. Yeah. But what I don't understand is, don't double down on this stuff in the marketing at the moment.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that is the crazy thing for me.
And the crazy thing is, like, you know, we were saying at the beginning of the podcast, with Jay being at this Fender thing and then looking at Sir and some of these other companies making like custom guitars right now for half the price, and you can order whatever you want.
Yeah.
How are Gibson making these and going, they're going to be $8,000? When you look at it and you go, it doesn't look like $8,000's worth of guitar. And yet you can, and you, as we've said countless times since January when I bought my Music Man, it's like, look at Music Man guitars and look what they're doing for $2,500 and go, oh, it's so odd.
Yeah.
The pricing to me, I think that's the thing more than anything. I'm like, I don't understand their pricing.
Yeah. But the thing is, I've got no problem at all with them making expensive guitars and also doing limited stuff. I don't care. But what you should be saying, for me, the way I would handle Gibson's marketing now is I would say, you know, we're still making the classic guitars for somewhere between £1,000 and £2,000
in America we're
making the classic Les Paul in America, no frills, the rock and roll machine that's powered, you know, music for the last 60 years, and you can buy one right now, be part of that legend, be part of that history. Not okay, we're going to send out a tweet that basically says we're making guitars that you can't afford based on cars that you can't afford, probably in a style that you hate, that has nothing to do with our rock and roll legacy. That just seems completely bonkers. Still make that guitar, and you know, someone walks into a Lexus dealer and goes, oh, that's cool, whatever, you know, nice. I'll get the car, and I'm a bit of a Gibson fan, I've got loads of money, that's a cool thing to have in my house. Don't lead with that. That's not your top story. That's not your headline story. Your headline story should be, by the way, we make American-made... We're still one of the only companies that makes guitars with our name on in America, you know, exclusively in America, and they start at $699 right up to £2,000, and you can own the same guitar that Jimmy Page played, or, you know, you could, the same guitar that it played on all those records that you love, not his, oh, by the way, you'll never have a Lexus and you'll never have this guitar. Yeah. That's our marketing.
I was just scrolling through their Twitter.
Their Twitter is not exceptionally bad.
And there's not a single picture of, like, normal Les Paul.
No.
And I'm like, and you know, think when you were talking about it, I was thinking about it, I was like, actually, you'd never see Gibson just talk about a Les Paul.
No. And then you compare,
that's very odd.
Compare that to Fender and, you know, the work that they were doing at things like The Great Escape, where they had loads of young bands on. They've obviously, all bands that play Fender, all young bands these days play Fender. No one plays Gibson at the moment, as we've seen and we've talked about before. And Fender are doing such a good job. You know, if you look at their, like, Twitter and their Facebook, showcase new bands that are like, oh yeah, by the way, they play a Jazzmaster. Jazzmasters are cool.
But it's not just the people they get involved with. It's the ranges that they make, introducing the offsets, expanding their color range so that they had colors that were appealing to young people. Everything they've released, like even sort of the higher end stuff, like the Professional, the American Originals,
yeah,
and then, you know, the offsets, and even right down to an FSR Surf Green Bullet Tele. Like, they know what they're doing. They're making all the right stuff to get guitars in people's hands. Plus, Fender Play, they've gone, oh, people aren't picking up a guitar so much, let's make a platform that's really well funded that supports people picking up a guitar and getting started. That's amazing. Meanwhile, Gibson make a Lexus Paul.
Yeah.
And I love Gibson.
But it's so at odds with the statements made by Henry, where he was saying, you know, what we're doing, we're struggling to get young people on board because, you know, these are old man guitars. You know, guitar is an old man thing. What we need to do is, you know, update the technology and update our designs. And actually, Fender have gone, No. What people want is, like, the designs from the past.
It's like
they just want them in, like, different colours.
It's like Henry's idea of young people is sort of something out of Tron, or like the girl in Jurassic Park who was a hacker. Like, that's what he thinks young people are, and they're obsessed with technology, right? We need technology in the guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And, you know, that's been quite evident in the last few years. Do you remember there was an Ethernet out guitar that they did for a little while? Because that was supposed to be the future, you know, digital signal.
Well, even that Tascam pack.
Yeah, well, totally. Yeah, very, very, very odd. The fact that the guitar comes with a sound card. And in a way, I can kind of see it. You know, they're encouraging home recording. But if that was...
That pack was £3,000.
Well, this is the problem. If it was an Epiphone pack that included, you know, Epiphone Les Paul Special 2, plus, you know, instead of an amp, maybe thinking, oh, do you know what? Most people don't have room for an amp or don't have the ability to turn it up. What everyone does have is a phone or a laptop. So we're going to plug... Instead of giving you an amp in your Les Paul Special 2 pack, you're going to get an interface that you can plug into your phone, plug headphones into your phone, and you're getting way better sounds than you ever would with a practice amp. Instead of doing that, they went, no, we're going to put it with an Orange Custom Shop 335. It's so backwards. You know, there's so many... What really riles me up about Gibson, and we talked about it in the video, and in no way I'm kind of one of those internet Gibson haters, because I think a lot of the things said about the company are just false. Firstly, but also very misguided. But there's so many things that they could just tweak the business model and the marketing slightly, and everyone would be like, okay, they're actually making steps in the right direction. But instead, they're putting out press releases and tweets and video, and spending thousands of pounds on the video that came out with this on promoting the fact they're doing a Lexus Les Paul, which, as you say, Matt, it will be a limited run, and yes, they'll all sell. But in that case, did they need to do this marketing? Is this just like a backfire? Couldn't they have just put them on the walls in Lexus dealers and gone, there you go, do you want it? Just buy it. So,
I think as well, it just, like you say, I think one thing where Fender are really, like, miles above anyone else in pretty much every brand, I think, is their artist relations.
Yeah, 100%.
Having the artist behind it and then people looking and aspiring to be those people and being fans of those musicians and those bands from all levels and going, they play that guitar, I want that guitar.
Yeah.
And at the moment, with Gibson, there's only two real people I can think of that are big, you know, like a big attraction for them, and that's Slash and Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah, and kids don't know who that is.
No, they know who Slash is because Guns N' Roses is massive, but Bonamassa is only really appealing to one market, which is becoming quite saturated.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They're not getting like new young people playing Gibsons and then showing that off. Well, that's exactly what Fender are doing. And it works because especially when we worked on the shop floor, you could see it. You could see the trends of what people were buying relating to exactly what music was popular at that point.
Definitely. And this kind of almost reminds me of the time, you know, in the 80s where young people didn't want to play Gibson guitars. That was like their dad's guitar. And what they wanted to play was Ibanez and Jackson, you know, things that were totally different from what had come before. And
what an awful time that must have been.
Well, yes and no. Like, I've still got quite a bit of a soft spot for like early Charvel stuff, you know, which is basically they took a Strat and they went, these pickups aren't hot enough, put in a humbucker, and they went, oh, okay, you know, Eddie Van Halen does all that weird stuff, I'll just put a Floyd Rose on that. And they're really simple guitars. They're not particularly, you know, it's not like they were doing neon green at that point. They were just like, oh, it's basically a Strat, but simplified and made for higher output. And it kind of reminds me of that. You know, Fender are really listening to that and playing off that and using that in their marketing. And Gibson just aren't doing it. They're just not doing that in the slightest.
Yeah.
And that seems weird to me. Surely, it just seems like there needs to be someone there who goes, hang on, why don't we just do this? And then, but you know, I don't know how the company's structured.
But it's not that they, this is the thing. It's not that they don't have the products. It's not that they don't have an 899 Les Paul, a £1,200 Les Paul, an £1,800 Les Paul that are all nice and have different things. Like the £1,200 one, I can't remember what that is. Is that the Classic? I think that's the Classic or the Tribute.
Traditional?
Which is, no, I think Traditional.
Classic,
is
I think, is the cheaper one of the two.
Okay, so anyway, whichever one, the Classic or Tribute, I think the Classic, I think you're right, is, you know, a satin finish sort of, you know, 59 style, like Les Paul, but, you know, in a satin finish, still with a nice sort of, you still get a nice like honey burst on it. And it has corners cut because it's a more affordable line. That's in the sort of more satin finish, but it's still a traditional looking cool Les Paul. No marketing behind it, nothing. They're not pushing that model. And that for me, like, that's the one. It's like, that's cool because that's your offset. You know, that's an American made sub £1,000. That's a Fender killer, and there's nothing behind it. They're not putting it in anyone's hands. They're not releasing FSR models of it in weird colors. You know, that's the thing they should be mopping up on. Even like the £1,800 stuff that they do is fantastic, but just again, zero marketing behind that.
And to me, it seems, you know, if we can't sit here and all pick out, okay, $1,299. That's the Classic or the Tribute or whatever, you know, because that seems a problem to me. And because, you know, a lot of stock shops still have stock from 2015, some stock shops still even have stock from 2013.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many different guitars the different price points.
A new range every year. And like, do you know, today at work, some new 2018 stuff came out, like some stuff that hadn't landed yet.
Right.
But the bulk of 2018 came out last summer.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, right. Oh, there's this. Oh, this is new stuff for 2018. So the range is expanding, even though we all know that 2019 has already been leaked on the internet as well. So,
well, obviously, we can't talk about that. Yeah. But,
well, that was Gibson leaked it themselves.
Well, we can't talk about it because nothing's confirmed. No, but I would say that the guitars themselves are fantastic. And if you were walking into a store and, you know, like you say, you've got $1,299 to spend and you've got the Fender stuff, American Pro, and you've got Gibson stuff at $1,299. It's not as simple as just going, oh, the Fender one's better, because that isn't true at all. But, and not saying it's not true, it might be better for you. The Fender one might be better for you, but those guitars are of equal quality. The problem is that I know I've got $1,299 to spend. I can tell you off the top of my head what Fender model I'll be looking at, and I can tell you probably my options either side of it. If I do that with Gibson, and, you know, considering we talk about this stuff every week, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you what the 1299 guitar is called. I couldn't tell you exactly what the cheaper, slightly cheaper options are. And I couldn't tell you what the slightly more expensive options are. The range is too confusing. And yes, they're trying to slim it down each year, but shops have still got stuff left from, you know, 5 years ago in some cases.
Yeah, there's still some 2013 stuff kicking around as well.
Yeah. So anyway, how did we get here? This is quite a...
It was a rabbit hole.
Oh, yes. The Gibson Lexus pull.
Yeah. We got into a Lexus and we really drove off on it. Let's talk about something else.
Speaking of things that are expensive.
Yes, the Dell Electro Cash Cow.
That's right. So this is not actually Dan Electro. It's Billionaire.
Oh, sorry.
Of course, Dan Electro introduced Billionaire as a completely different company and even set up its own website, billionairetone.com, and it's marketed as Billionaire by Dan Electro.
I love it.
This is, the completely nonsensical...
Talk about good branding.
This, yeah, okay. So we've spoken about these things before, and I think one thing Dan Electro have been really good at this year is they obviously recently employed a marketing department.
Yes.
Because you'll notice that everyone from Mary Spender to Rob Chappers has got a video
not
out.
Not us though, Joe. How did that happen?
Oh, no, wait. I think they did. No, I think I do have them like in one of these cupboards somewhere.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
But, you know, yeah. We haven't done anything with them. Anyway, these are great. The Billionaire Dan Electro series pedals. It was quite an unusual range because I think they released like a drive, a boost, a spinning speaker, and I can't remember what
the power supply that you put 4 9-volt batteries
four
into.
9-volt batteries. It's so good. It's such a weird range. Anyway, they've expanded it by one pedal, and they've introduced the new Cash Cow Drive, which is a new edition, a second drive available in the Billionaire series. The Cash Cow is supposed to emulate that of a 100-watt stack, so it's like a high-ish gain supercharged drive, very different from the other drive. I can't remember the name of it in their series, but it was far more of a like a blues driver style thing. So this is a much more high gain, big fat drive, and it sounds good. From I was watching Rob Chappers and Dave Hollingworth doing a little video demo of it. Sounds fine, sounds great, and I actually think the chassis of these pedals are very good, like surprisingly.
Yeah, we all said they were plastic, and they're actually metal.
Actually sort of and look pretty chunky and cool. So, yeah, I think they're fine. I mean, I don't care about high gain drives, so it's difficult to get excited, but. New pedal in the range, $79, you know, like these pedals are super affordable. I think I'd sooner buy one of these than one of the TC drives in that affordable range. So
I think what I'll do is I'll wait like 15 years for the whole range to come out and then I'll just collect them all.
Yeah, it's probably the best way.
Good idea.
Probably the best way. they've got good names, but they're not quite fish and chips, are they?
Mm. No, where's my like, you know, chili dog and... French toast.
Ah, so good. We've got our Guitar Nerds video about those soon as well. It's gonna be excellent. Talking about excellent pedals, Mataverse have just announced the Quadramix.
Yes. What a time for this to come out, because I was actually looking for something just like this. Matt from Mataverse has released the Quadramix, which is basically a 4-input to 2-output mixer.
So I don't understand what this is. Actually, listeners, behind the scenes details here, this one was given to me to talk about on the news, but I don't understand what it is, so I had to give it to Matt. What is it?
I basically just said exactly what it is. You know what a mixer is, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it's something that Joey puts in a drink with gin.
Oh, yeah. I should have said that. you mean whiskey?
Yes.
Yeah, whiskey.
Whiskey is his mixer with gin.
Yeah. It's basically a PA mixer or an input mixer for your pedal board, allowing you to plug 4 separate things in and then have them all summed to either 1 or 2 outputs.
Wait, what are your 4 things?
Well, for example, so it's got 2 high impedance and 2 low impedance inputs, so you could have 2 keyboards and 2 guitars.
But you're only going to be playing 1 at a time, right?
Well, take, for example, the random tone generator from Electroharmonix. Say if you wanted your random tone generator to go at the same time as your guitar, but your pedals have only got 1 input. So you can run 2 things in at once and then 1 out and then into your pedal board. And because it's a mixer, it's got 4 volume controls, you can fade stuff in and out. Or, for example, if you put a looper at the beginning.
Or drum machine, yeah.
But the great thing is the outputs also have headphones. So if you've got keyboards and stuff, you can go into those. You can go straight out into headphones.
That's cool.
I think it's a really cool little product. There's a couple of other people that do similar. Like, I think Red Panda make one, but there's nothing that has the 4 inputs and the master volume. And all the inputs go beyond Unity gain as well. So you can like distort them as well, which I think is quite cool. So you can like totally overload the inputs and then you've still got a master volume control.
No,
but it's great
cool.
If you play a kit, if you, for example, even if you don't play them at the same time, you know, if you just want to play guitar and then you want to switch to keyboard without unplugging and plugging in, it's a perfect solution because you can just turn the volume down on one and then turn it up on the other when you want to go over to it.
Yeah, or if you've got like an acoustic guitar that you use for like one song or two songs or whatever, then you just don't need a... It kind of... it's sort of doing what an ABY box would do, but it does four ins, essentially.
Yeah, or if you want to run two effects chains, for example.
Yeah, you could do that.
You know, or if you like come stereo out of a delay pedal and you want to run two chains after that, like two different reverbs and then have them some at the end, you can do that, something like that.
You could also run four different effects loops and then sum that down to two.
Like I think it's a really good thing for like synth players. There's a couple of videos, obviously Matt always has excellent videos for his channel, and he's got one going through his Tetra step, which is his four step like the step sequence does four steps into a warble swell echo and then also two Volkers and then his drone machine, and then he's mixing that all in with the little mixer and playing on them live. So
Some of his stuff veers very much more into the kind of production world than it does into guitar, doesn't it? Because this, I think this is meant to be used with things like Volkers and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think for guitar, I think my sort of main use would be, running, like I said, I bought that TR-8 drum machine.
Yeah.
It'd be able to play my drum machine at the same time as my guitar and just have it go through the amp, because I don't want to have to plug into separate monitors and then, you know... easier to, and then that means you can run it all through effects pedals and stuff as well.
Yeah, so it's basically a cool little pedal board friendly mixer. I like it a lot. Something else I like are Beatronics pedals, who have just announced the Royal Jelly and the Buzzter.
Yes, yeah. So Beatronics, super popular brand at the moment.
They
making
really
cool,
are. They
cool
really
stuff.
Are popular.
Yeah, everyone's getting pretty.
Came out, I think at NAMM last year,
yeah,
was the first time I saw them, and they had a tiny booth in the basement.
They are super cool effects pedals. So the wait, Matt, weren't you telling me something about the circuit boards are shaped like
all
bees?
The circuit boards are like shaped like bees or like honeycombs or various other bee related things.
That's cool. That's super cool.
What about the letter B?
No, I don't think there's a letter B, unfortunately, but they have mugs with bees on them.
Yeah, that'll do. I'll take that.
So I think it's very difficult to create a pedal that's doing something different, especially when you're talking about overdrive or fuzz. It's all about regurgitation. But the Beatronics Royal Jelly is very much a step in the direction of new style stuff, in that the controls are super sensible, versatile, and designed around how you might actually use something. So this is a 3-foot switch, double overdrive stroke fuzz. So it has two overdrive to fuzz circuits that run in parallel, and the rotary control for them moves from overdrive to fuzz as you wind through. And they're separately voiced as well, one king and one queen. Now, so you can blend those up. You can also run a preset for each of them. That's what your second 2 foot switches are.
Okay.
But you can also blend in your dry as well as the level of the effect. So, which is exactly kind of what you want on fuzz, so that you don't just completely disappear in the mix. It makes fuzz applicable to not just weird solo parts. I think the controls on that like sound absolutely fantastic, so I'm really super excited to kind of, it sounds great, you know, from what you can ever tell on a set of headphones in a YouTube video, but I'd be really excited to have a butcher's at that, because that does sound super cool. And my favorite thing, the Buzzter, is their preamp stroke boost pedal. I'm getting really into preamps at the moment, just off of the back of that that Petty John lift. Just because it sounds so good. No, that's the Petty John. You're pointing at the Petty John, Petty Drive. The Petty John lift is over there on top of that rather nice 4-watt Davis.
Oh, yeah, amp. So it is, yeah.
The Petty John lift was just one of those pedals that really adds some depth to your tone in a way that I can't quite describe the Buzzter from what it sounds like offers a very similar thing plus a load of boost. So I will be really interested to hear this as well. What a cool couple of pedals, and all of the Beatronic stuff looks fantastic as well as being incredibly solidly built. So that is a cool addition to the world.
You really are into preamps at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, I think
just
so.
Just looking around, like, well, all the stuff that we've got is either like clean boost or preamps.
Yeah, there's the Lunarstone Boost. What else is there? There's the TC Electronic Spark Mini. There's the Bright Onion Soap. What else can you see that's a...
There's an Anasound one somewhere, isn't there?
The Anasound one's the Lazy Comp, but I do have a lot of other boosts. There's the AWOL Nano Boost, the smallest boost pedal in the world. That's there. There's a load of other stuff as well. There's like the Contraband somewhere. There's a load of boosty things here, actually. I like boosts. Preampy things.
When people reach out to us and go, oh, you know, we'll send you a couple of pedals, what sort of thing? And I'm like, well, we're into pedals that make you sound better but don't tend to do a lot.
Yeah.
And that's why we end up with so many.
Well, yeah. Tell you what, actually, thinking about it, this the JHS, the whatever that orange compressor is that they do.
Oh, yeah, the Pulp and Peel.
Pulp and Peel.
Yeah, that's really
that
good.
That works really well as a preamp as well because it's got that kind of drive.
I do really, really like that pedal. The Pulp and Peel is super cool, although... Like as a compressor, because I love compression so much, I'm always changing to different things. And I recently got the ZVEX Philosopher's Tone Mini. I really think... Is that ZVEX? Pigtronics. Yeah. I always do that with those two brands. Yeah. The Pigtronics Philosopher's Tone Mini, and that is an exceptionally great sounding compressor. Do you know what? I was super surprised by this week. Bear in mind, I'm not too fussed about fuzz. The Tate FX Raise the Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fantastic little single control fuzz that I've been really, really enjoying.
I thought you were going to mention a Guitar Nerd's classic, the Svi Sound Techno Foo.
That is up there, yeah. It's such a weird pedal. So the Svi Sound Techno Foo is a micro pedal.
It's about 300 quid.
It's about 300 pounds, yeah.
Isn't it based off Metal Zone?
Yeah, it's a Metal Zone.
A really
basically.
Expensive Metal Zone, yeah.
Yeah, really expensive Metal Zone that's got basically a load of flashing lights on the front of it.
Yeah.
And it's just mega money.
It's so strange. It's such a weird
£300.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what's really cool that I really like at the moment? Well, everything by Southampton Pedals, who we met at NAMM.
Have we got some here?
Yeah, there's one just behind you, the Utility Knife. The Utility Knife is their it's their modulation multi-tool. So it has like tremolo, phaser, flanger, you know, something else, chorus probably. But just in like a really robust rotary controlled box. I think it's great. If you use modulation a bit, but not too much, but you use a couple of different things, then I think it's a fantastic pedal to have on your board. I love how well built the Southampton stuff is. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, looks fancy indeed. With that, shall we delve into a whole big swimming pool ocean of
questions? Yeah.
Rob says, having an absolute mare trying to wire up my board with the G2. It won't take two right angle jacks and a single loop. I therefore need straight to angle patch cables and lots of them. Owing to visual impairment, soldering and the Evidence Audio kits aren't viable. What are my options? It's all got to go on a pedal train Novo 32, which is proving a mixed blessing. More pedals, yes, but also less threading room for cables.
I am not a fan of the Novo pedal boards. Bear in mind, I have one and use one.
Okay.
I don't believe that they do offer you more pedals. They don't make any sense.
Okay.
But they don't make any sense because the idea of the Novo
it's massive. It's sitting right next to it and it is massive.
Yeah. No, but it's wrong. It's a silly size. I've retired that for a reason because they were like, yeah, here's half an extra tier. And it was sort of, I think they came out just before the ES8 came out. And the ES8 really changed things. And I think it was at a time when people would, if you had a switcher, it was probably an octa switch. And so it was one of those very, very slim, sort of narrow switching systems. And this can basically just about fit one of those up on the front, and then you can have two tiers of pedals. But if you're using a boss size switcher, which most people are now, you cannot fit a second tier of pedals on. So it's pointless. What it means is you have a massive gap between the switcher and the pedals. It doesn't make any sense.
So Matt, how does the G2 compare size wise? What patch cables would you use? And secondly, is the Novo 32 the right board for this job?
I must agree with Joe on the Novo ones. It's weird because that smaller extra tier, I think, is for mini pedals. And it's kind of like, it's not great for a switch. You might as well just, there's no point if you've got a switcher because it takes up a bunch of tiers anyway. The G2 is roughly the same size as the ES8. I think it's slightly bigger, but it suffers, I guess, in a way from the same problems. The fact that switch, to get so many loops on there, the jack spacing is really tight.
Yeah.
So right ankle jacks, especially like nitric jacks, if you're using the like chunky Fender patch cables, for example, don't fit. So you either have to go for straight soldered cables, which obviously takes up a lot of time, or solderless cables. And I think we had a similar question like this before. I definitely remember answering something in the Facebook group before. I switched from George L to the Boss ones because the Boss ones go both right angled and straight from the same plug. They were easy to use, pretty simple to set up, and then you can go straight out of the G2. Plug spacing's really small, and then right angled on the pedal so you can still bunch your pedals up.
How does that work with the jacks? Have they got basically an angle thing on them? So you
can
use
a little dip. So you can bend the cable down.
Right, I see. Well, I see.
And they basically are just plug and play. You just pop them in, then just tighten up the screw. That's it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, yeah, I need to investigate that because I need to tidy up my board. So maybe I'll pick up some Boss.
Because there are plenty of great solderless kits out there. And like I said, I'd used George L's for ages. The problem I had was George L stuff became quite expensive. And it was also the first solderless cable and they'd never really updated it. So it became a little bit outdated. In fact, the cable wasn't very flexible. The ends were quite chunky and obviously the manufacturer and the machining of those has got way better and way smaller.
Yeah.
So for me, that made more sense. I really like the Evidence ones, but the problem I have with the Evidence ones is that there's too many processes to get them to work.
Okay.
And you end up ruining your thumb because you have to like strip the cable, peel away all the copper thread on the outside, then cut a little bit of the inner layer so you've got the single strand in the middle, then insert it into the end, then bend it over, then put the cap, then tighten it up.
Yeah.
Right. They are great, but they're also, once again, they are relatively expensive.
I mean,
and just ruin your thumb.
I would say that they're not great. Tim, the guitarist in my band, got spent a chunk of money on those, and his board goes down more now due to patch cables than it did when he was using like cheap Rotosound ones. I think they're a false economy. But I've always said this. I think the whole concept of solderless patch cables is a false economy. I think everyone will abandon it in a few years when they realise that it's rubbish and
I guess it's just building a custom board like this, though. Is, you know, how can you use standard patch cables if you're building a board like this? You just can't use standard patch cables.
I guess the same way that literally everyone did ever for like the last 30 years.
Well, yeah, but not with these switching systems like this because the jacks are so close together. That's the difference, I think.
And I think the thing is people 30 years ago, people didn't change the pedals that much because there wasn't that much to change. Basically, had a Boss pedal or an Electro Harmonix pedal or maybe an MXR pedal. Now people change their rigs so often. It's like soldered cables, unless you can bother to sit there and solder them. It's always the problem. But I mean, I agree. You know, soldered cables are really sturdy. They're just, if you've, like I said, visual impairment, obviously it doesn't make it easier to solder those things.
Yeah.
But I found the thing that I bought that made the biggest difference was a really decent cable tester.
Just to make sure that you've got it spot on once you do it.
Well, with the Boss ones, I actually build the cables in the cable tester and then get them so the lights come on and they work and then test them and then you like just properly pull them so you know there's no loose connections or breaking, you know, in it. And then I've not had any problems. When I didn't have a cable tester, it was so often just like trial and error, plugging into the amp, like tapping the end, going, oh yeah, that's all right. Can't really test if it's like working if you bend it or not. And I had way more problems now. Don't have any.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Well, we're going to answer some more of your questions over on this week's Patreon episode.
Patreon.
If you want to hear it, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Guitar Nerds.
From $5 a month, you get the regular episode.
$1.
$1 a month.
You don't have to pay $5, you can get one.
$1 a month, you get the regular episode ad-free and early. At $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour every week, plus access to the back catalogue of all the extra episodes. There's something like, so we're up at episode 167 or 168, maybe it's 169, this one. So there's like probably about half of that worth of hours, because we do half an hour every week. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot, isn't it?
I was thinking about doing another mini-series.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that you get at the $5 tier. You get access to exclusive interviews and the mini-series, like Branton's Rant On.
Yep. I want to do a new one called Joe's Junk.
Okay. And I'm sure everyone would pay to see and hear Joe's Junk.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
What's it going to consist of?
I'm going to talk about my junk.
Good.
There's a lot of it here.
You can get that at patreon.com/guitarnerds. The other thing you can get at the $10 tier is you can have your name read out on the regular episode every week by Joe Branton in one breath. We've had some more people this week,
are making up names.
People are using longer names than ever to make this more difficult for you. I noticed last week was a struggle. So this week we've got three names, one of which has four names within the name.
Great.
So this is going to be interesting, I think. So here we go. These are your Patreon backers for this month.
Merrin Peters, Golden G. Richard III, Sean Arbo, Chris Wolfman, Cutlitson, Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagon, Tucker Amadon, Emery Cooper, Emery James Baker, Christoph Rapsis, Zane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Fitzer, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Losat, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordvik, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Gunners, Andy Joyce, Carlos Manta, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moo Gravett, Colin Anderson.
See, no little outro speech there, because it is definitely getting to the point where this is hard to do in one breath.
Yeah, thanks, Golden G. Richard III.
The best name we've had sign up for the Patreon yet. I love it. Thank you so much, Golden G. Richard III, for joining in. If you want to join in the conversation, you can join all of those people that you just heard over at facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @guitarnerds. You can go to YouTube, youtube.com/guitarnerdsvideos, where you can see the latest video about the weirdest signature pedals ever. And also you can visit the Guitar Nerds site, guitarnerds.net, which has had a bit of a spruce up recently, and you can catch the latest video, latest podcasts, all the Instagram stuff, and even send us a message if you want to, from guitarnerds.net. Thanks very much for listening this week, and we'll see you next time.
Farewell.
Goodbye.